Good morning. So I am doing a morphological revision of the genus Elytroleptis, and I'm going to try to show you this morning why Elytroleptis is one of the most interesting genera in all of Cerambycidae, if not, I think, the most interesting. So just to give a brief introduction to the family Cerambycidae in general, these are known as the longhorn beetles. They're one of the most diverse beetle families in the world. They have a worldwide distribution with over 35,000 described species. They're generally phytophagous in both the larval and adult stages. They feed on both dead plant material and living plant material. Now, since this is such a diverse family, I wanted to just orient you as to where Elytroleptis falls into Cerambycidae. So Cerambycidae is divided into several subfamilies. One of the largest is the Cerambycinae, which houses 65 tribes in just the Western Hemisphere alone. One of those tribes is the Trachodurini, which is also immense and is divided into subtribes, actually. One of these subtribes is the Trachodurina, which has 124 genera. One of those genera is Elytroleptis, which has 18 species. Okay, so we're in Elytroleptis now. They are connected by these features of relatively short antennae for cerambycids. You can see here the males do have longer antennae than the females, but they're still not very long for cerambycids. They only extend to a little more than half the length of the elytra. With these antennae, they also have segments 5 through 11 triangularly serrate, produced at their inner apices, without being pinnacellated, which just means they don't have any little tufts of hairs at the end. There are 18 species, as I mentioned, and many of these were described by workers such as LeConte, Lindsley, Chemsack, and Null. And these are 10 of the 18 species. I just wanted to show you the diversity in just the genus alone. You can see, along with the antennal characteristics that unite them, they're also united by this beautiful aposematic coloration. They have these gorgeous oranges, yellows, reds, and the contrasting blacks. Their distribution is generally southwestern, found in Arizona, Texas, and New Mexico. Also Mexican, and a few species do extend into Central America all the way down to Costa Rica. There's also one species, Elytroleptis floridanus, which, as I'm sure you can surmise by its name, is found in Florida, and also throughout the eastern coast of the United States. So this distribution map currently up shows the distribution of 17 species without floridanus. This is with Floridanus included, so I just wanted to point that out to you. Now, I mentioned that cerambycids, in general, are regarded as phytophagous. The 35,000 species throughout the world are, except for three, and those three exceptions are found in Elytroleptis. And there they are pictured to the right, Apicalis, Ignitis, and Limpianus. And as you can immediately see, they have that beautiful aposematic coloration. Their elytra are expanded apically. They have serrate antenna. So you can see that they're these extraordinary mimics of the netwing beetles in the family Lycidae, and there's good reason for this. They're involved in mimicry complexes with them. Again, I have to the left over here, you can see Elytroleptis apicalis with its model, Lycus fernandesi. There's also a moth associated with this complex, Cerdia constans. Over to the right, you can see Elytroleptis ignitis with its model, Lycus laripes, and again, there is a moth associated with this complex, Eubaphe unicolor. Now, Lycid mimicry within the Cerambycidae is not unique, so that doesn't make Elytroleptis all that exciting. There are over 200 species in the Cerambycidae that are supposedly Lycid mimics, spanning 21 different tribes. What does make Elytroleptis so exciting, though, is that they're actually predaceous on their own models. So in this picture, you can see Elytroleptis ignitis tearing into the back of Lycus fernandesi. This was based on work done by Lindsley, Eisner, Klotz, and Kafatos during the 60s. As you can see by this picture, the cerambycids are not specifically prey specific to the Lycid in their mimicry complex. Now, this raises just some amazing questions. Has predation arisen just once in the Cerambycidae? Is this amazing genus monophyletic? We don't know. But before we even start that, a generic revision hasn't been done, and that's what I'm doing. So I just want to highlight just a few of the characters that I'm using in my analysis. So the elytra of these beetles hosts a number of characters. As you can see here, grandis shows the condition that about half of Elytroleptis species show, where the elytra are expanded apically. And then scabricalis over here shows the other condition where the elytras are subparallel. The number of costae on these elytra is also important. Many species have three on each elytron, whereas other species have four. And the degree of punctation between these costae is also important. You can see that from this picture over here. In this species, there's about 3 to 4 punctures between each of the costae, whereas in some species, such as grandis, they're between 9 and 10. The pronota of the Elytroleptis also hosts a number of amazing characters. The most apparent that you can see from these pictures is the presence or absence of these two thick arcuate bands of pubescence on the pronotum. They're present here in rufipennis and absent in humeralis. Rufipennis is also a nice example because there's actually a color difference between where the fairly glabrous area is and where the pubescent areas are. The lateral sides of the pronota are also distinct. They go from generally rounded in species such as Floridanus all the way to being triangulate in species such as Ignitis. There are also characters associated with the head, and I just wanted to point out this one specifically just to highlight the importance of taking ratios with these measurements, just because there is a large size differentiation between different species and even within species. So we wanted to measure first the distance between the eyes, and then we measured the distance between the antennal insertions and took a ratio just to see what the distance between the eyes would be. This is Ignitis, and it's kind of has a wide eyes with over 1.5 difference. There are some other species that are pretty close-eyed together, like a little cross-eyed. So. Now these are preliminary findings. I'm still looking at characters and I'm still working on this revision. My work will end up with the standardization of all the species descriptions, production of a revised key to all the species, synonymies within this genus, and possible new descriptions of species. I just wanted to highlight one possible synonymy here. This is Immaculapennis and Floridanus, which just appear to be color morphs at this stage in the revision. These, because they are aposomatically colored, do have a great deal of polychromaticism, and it seems to be the case with these two. And finally, we will be conducting a phylogenetic analysis with the inclusion of many additional characters from the antennae, the legs, and the genitalia. I feel comfortable saying in a room full of entomologists that I'm excited to look at the genitalia of these beetles. Genitalia is not routinely studied in the Cerambycidae, so I'm going to be looking at that. I'm going to be including outgroups from within the Trachodurini and also within the monotypic Holoplurini, which was historically placed with Elytroleptis. And finally, testing the monophyly of Elytroleptis, which will hopefully give greater insight into Elytroleptis and into just predation in Cerambycidae in general. So at this time, I'd just like to thank everybody that was involved in this presentation, especially my major advisor, Dr. Kelly Miller, everybody in the Miller Lab who's been so helpful, especially Dr. David Lightfoot, Dr. Sandra Brantley, Gina Nierens, Alicia Hodson, and Sharon Davidson, and also the numerous public and private institutions that have generously loaned me material without which I could not have had this project possible. At this time, I'd like to take any questions that you have. Thank you. Yes. Yes, I think so. There hasn't been enough work to say definitive. Oh, sorry. The question was whether if they're sequestering any chemicals, and I do believe that they are. There hasn't been any definitive work on that, but a lot of times when they attack the lysids, they don't actually eat them entirely. They'll just take kind of like a blood meal almost and then walk away. So I think that they probably are. Yes?
That's just a really cool system, those three
No, we don't know what the larvae look like or are for these beetles, so that would be amazing if we can find them, and I think that would lend a lot of insight into how this complex works.
Any further questions? In that case, thank you very much, Tracy. Lovely presentation.